Alice and Witness, the podcast devoted to personal explorations at the New York Film Festival. I'm your host, Ryan Swen, and unfortunately, for the time being, I will be your only host. Dan, because of reasons due to conflicts with work on campus and with general schoolwork and with internships, has decided that he will not be able to dedicate enough time and focus to the festival. So for the time being and probably permanently, he will be leaving his position as a permanent host. Hopefully he will be back to guest perhaps multiple times, and I greatly anticipate that. But for now, I will be your only host, and it's kind of strange to break this news in a non-main episode, but it happened today, and so that's really the appropriate time to say it. So for now, I will be the host. This might affect the regularity of episodes in the time being. I'll try to have as many episodes as possible with guests. I don't anticipate being able to carry out an entire episode just by myself. I feel like that'd be too one-sided and monotonous. And even carrying out this mini episode is, I hope it won't tax you, the listener, too much. So we will resume the main episodes in September, and we'll have guests each time, but it may or may not be monthly until and if I'm able to find a permanent second host. So that's the sort of news for now in regards to the main run of Catalyst and Witness. But today we're here for the Festival Dispatch, for the first Festival Dispatch of 2019, for the 57th New York Film Festival. And both for recording and hopefully for releasing, the main slate, the full main slate of 29 films was released. And it is an incredible and absolutely fantastic list with a lot of directors that were maybe expected, and I expected to some degree or another, but to actually see them all collected together is really astonishing. And it's a very international collection, and one that I think is that it has a great variety and a great collective excitement and innovation about them. I should say at the top for this Festival Dispatch that I'm attempting to record this entirely unedited, so it may seem even choppier than usual, and of course this is the first time I'm recording without a co-host, so this might sound, so please bear with me, basically. So like with last time, I'll simply be going down the list, mostly alphabetically, with the gala films interspersed in and out, and this is entirely sans notes, basically just with the NIF program descriptions, my own knowledge of the films and the filmmakers, and hopefully this won't come off too much as reading ad copy, especially without a co-host, but we'll see how it turns out, basically. So starting with opening night, it's a world premiere, which is significant in and of itself, because last year NIF didn't have any world premieres, and of course wasn't any the worse off for it, but it is nice to see one again. This is Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. Even though this is Scorsese's sixth appearance in NIF, it almost feels like a homecoming of sorts, because besides one appearance, he has only shown nonfiction work, and the one fiction film that he showed was in some ways his breakthrough in the American mainstream with the world premiere of Mean Streets in 1973. And it's nice to see him return in such fashion with another crime mob film of sorts, though it seems considerably more large scale, not the least because of its large budget, but because of how much time it seems to cover and how much it seems like a true passion project for Scorsese. It basically tells the story of the right-hand man of Jimmy Hoffa, played by Robert De Niro. The man is Frank Sheeran, and Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamster president, is played by Al Pacino, and it also stars Joe Pesci and Harvey Keitel. And it's basically from the details released about it aren't many, but it does definitely seem to cover a great deal of time, represented by a great deal of CGI and facial de-aging, basically. And the results have already appeared to some degree, and they do look maybe a little bit strange, but I think all appearances seem to suggest that it looks like a very involved, very deeply expansive take on the crime film, which in itself is quite exciting in a way that expands across many years, but also many different tones. So hopefully so that looks very strong. Basically, the first non-gala film alphabetically is Mati Diop's Atlantics, now subtitled Atlantics, A Ghost Love Story, for its English release. And it's not necessarily the feature debut of Mati Diop. She does have a film over 40 minutes, so technically feature length, named A Thousand Suns. So technically, it's not quite her feature debut, but this is her first film over an hour, certainly, just under or around 100 minutes or so. And it seems like a certain expansion of her short, also named Atlantics, about the migrant crisis and set in Senegal, not her homeland, but her heritage, basically. And as the title suggests, it is based around this strange love affair between a woman who's engaged to be married to another, to a wealthier man against her will, in an arranged marriage, and a young construction worker. And a construction worker sets off with some of his friends unannounced to try to emigrate to Spain, and they all disappear. Yet on the wedding night, a certain presence seems to come back. And from what I understand, the film engages in certain amounts of even horror or certainly the supernatural in the form of possessions, but it just sounds absolutely fascinating. And I haven't actually seen any of Diop's work. I plan to see A Thousand Suns before the film comes out, presumably this year because of its Netflix release. And of course, Atlantics also won the Grand Prix at the Cannes Film Festival. So it certainly sounds very promising, especially considering both Diop's already prior work, already very established work with her shorts, and her acting work, especially in 35 Shots of Rum, the Claire Denis film. The next film is Baccarat, directed by Kleber Mendonça Filho and his longtime production designer and making his directorial debut, Juliano Dornelis. And Mendonça Filho's last scene with his very wonderful Aquarius, starring Sonia Braga, from 2016. And this one seems to be in a different vein, one much more indebted to thriller and suspense and a Most Dangerous Game-esque scenario. It takes place in the eponymous fictional town on the occasion of a woman's return for the burial of, I believe, her mother. And quickly the film becomes about the village's resistance to this group of white tourists who have designs on hunting the village people for sport. And quickly it becomes an all-out battle, and it seems to owe a great debt to many genre films, and the school in the town is literally named after John Carpenter, and I believe it uses some of his music cues, though I could be mistaken on that. And it won the jury prize at the Cannes Film Festival, and it certainly seems like a very strong and very strange film, and I'm very, very excited for it. The next film is Beanpole by Kantemir Balagov, a Russian filmmaker who had a film last year called Closeness, which was a new director's new films, and now and he had and Beanpole premiered in Uncertain Regard at this year's Cannes and won the Best Director prize. And it's set in the aftermath of World War II in Leningrad, and two women, it's basically about two women who form this bond after a specific traumatic incident that occurs early into the film. And from what I understand, it explores the bond in the aftermath of this trauma of this one incident, and seems to, and of course takes much from the aftermath of the war. And I don't know exactly what to expect. I haven't seen Closeness, though it does seem, that film also seemed to garner its own share of controversy, but it seems to be, it follows in the line of filmmakers making their, a lot of these filmmakers at the top of this slate alphabetically are first timers, which is very promising. Mendoza Filho, it's his second time, but Dornelis' first time, Diop's first time, Balagov's first time, and the next filmmaker is also a first-timer, Oliver Laxey, with his film Fire Will Come. Technically not his first appearance in the festival, because Laxey had a film in the one-year-only exploration section in the 2016 New York Film Festival with Mimosas, which I've seen part of, but I need to go back and complete. And it is his, and it's his return to his native homeland of Spain. And he essentially seems to be a very quotidian, almost blurring the lines between documentary and fiction film, where his where it follows two non-professional actors, his Amador and his mother Benedicta. And Amador has just returned home from prison, where he was serving time for arson. And it follows this sort of, it follows basically his day-to-day life in the forest and countryside of Northwest Spain. And so it certainly seems to be very much in this almost documentary mode of storytelling that a lot of films in recent years, a lot of Arjez films have followed. So I'm very curious. From what I did see of Mimosas, it did seem quite promising. The next film is by a regular of sorts, Kelly Reichard, with her fourth appearance in the festival, with the film First Cow, which I wasn't sure was actually going to be completed or not, and it seemed like it was going to miss, but it will premiere at TIFF. Fire Will Come, by the way, showed at Uncertain Regard also, and won the jury prize at Uncertain Regard. But First Cow will premiere at TIFF, and it shows Reichard seemingly going back to both the Pacific Northwest after her sojourn to the Midwest in Certain Women, and back to a period setting following her work in Meek's Cutoff in 2010. So it also takes place in a Western mode of sorts, and it follows a man who has, played by John McGarrow, who has joined a group of fur trappers in Oregon, and along with a Chinese immigrant played by Orion Lee, begins a business which relies apparently on the clandestine participation of a nearby wealthy landowner's prized milking cow. So it certainly seems to follow it's her first film starring from the looks of it, exclusively men since Oldjoy, which is a particular favorite of mine among her work. And it seems to, and apparently it, Reichardt shows her distinct talent for depicting the peculiar rhythms of daily living and ability to capture the immense unsettling quietude of rural America. So it definitely seems to be very rooted in this particular mode of Reichardt's. The next film is A Girl Missing by Koji Fukada, who's also making his first appearance in the festival. The only other film I know of his, and which I have seen, I reviewed for the film stage, was Harmonium, starring Tadanobu Asano, which I did quite like. And it certainly has a good deal in common with the sort of Kiyoshi Kurosawa mode of thriller, and I found to be quite effective in exploring the aftermath of a trauma as well, and this one seems to be in that vein additionally. And it stars Mariko Tsutsui as a middle-aged private nurse in a small town for her family, and taking care of the entirely female clan's elderly matriarch, and she also befriends the two teenage daughters. And when one of the girls disappears, the resulting media sensation seems to be the focus of the film, and it is focused on how easily and frighteningly life can spiral out of control. So it certainly, again, seems to be working in that vein of a slower but very, if not tense, then emotionally taxing sort of vein. So the next film is another. Fukuda also had a film earlier in New Directors, New Films, though I think it was sometime in the last decade, in the decade of the 2000s rather than the 2010s. The next film is I Was at Home But by Angela Shanalek, one of the more well-known directors, or one of the directors just breaking through from the Berlin School. And she became well-known in American audiences, festival audiences, from what I can tell, through her film The Dreamed Path from 2016, which is really fascinating and one of the more faithful adherents of the Bressonian method. That's definitely a simplification, but it definitely owes a great deal to that mode. And for this, she won the Best Director Prize at Berlin. And it seems to follow a domestic drama following Astrid, played by Maren Eggert, trying to hold herself and her fragile teenage son and young daughter together following the death of their father 2 years earlier. And it seems it from what I've heard, it hews closely to that more restrained, more elliptical method, though it seems closer to a tableau style or a master shot style than the tight close-ups of Bresson and of The Dream Path. And I'm very curious about it and to see more of Shanalek's work, because it seems so sharp, so precise, and yet so strong in its own way. The next film is by yet another first-timer, though also in the same boat as Alexei, Albert Serra, who had The Death of Louis XIV in Explorations in 2016, and is here with Liberté, which premiered at Un Certain Regard and won the Best Direct. It premiered at Un Certain Regard and won the Special Jury Prize, and it is basically a take on the Marquis de Sade, taking place over a single night in a forest in France in the 18th century, following a group of libertines, complete with wigs, engaging in games of sadism, masochism, sex, in an effort to achieve satisfaction, but very rarely actually getting it. And it takes place, it seems, almost entirely in the dark, very striking chiaroscuro, over the course of 132 minutes. And it, from what many people, including Dennis Lim, say, it appears to be the most daring film selected in the official competition at Cannes in quite some time. So it certainly seems very, very promising. The next film is Martin Eden, directed by Pietro Marcello, also in his first appearance, and his last film, Lost and Beautiful, I watched last week, and which is very striking and very promising, and showed at New Directors, New Films, and operates as a documentary fiction hybrid. And this one hews closer to fiction, but it seems to also carry that same unique and more fantastical take on neorealism, similar in some ways to say Alice Rohrwacher. And it takes place in an unspecified moment in Italy's history, but was adapted from a 1909 novel by Jack London. So even at the very start, it seems to be playing in that vein. And Martin, played by Luca Marinelli, is a member of the proletariat class, and he has artistic aspirations, and who hopes that his dreams of becoming a writer will help him rise above his station and marry a wealthy young university student. The twin dissatisfactions, working class toil and bourgeois success, lead to political reawakening and destructive anxiety. So it seems closer to a more conventional vein, but considering Marcello's previous filmography, it certainly sounds exciting. The next film was entirely unexpected to me. I hadn't even heard of it before its selection today, and it's called The Money Changer, directed by Federico Vero, a Uruguayan director who first became really known to me last year with his film Belmonte, which I saw on Netflix probably last week or so, which is a very simple, disarmingly almost too simple story of a middle-aged painter trying to become a better father. And this one seems more ambitious, but also not necessarily fast-paced, but very compact formulation, in only 97 minutes, among a lot of films which are around 2 hours, though there are no extremely long films like last year with Lathor. And the direct description says it's based on a 1979 novella, Así Habló el Cambista, by Juan Enrique Gruber, and it features Daniel Hendler as Humberto Brause, who takes advantage of Uruguay's poor economy by specializing in offshore money laundering. Spanning the 50s to the 70s, the film follows Humberto as he gets increasingly in over his head with multiple shady bookkeeping schemes throughout South America, leading to an ultimate life or death decision. So it seems to be very close to a less narrative form, and it seems, even if it's more ambitious, political, and forceful than his other films, as the description states, I'm very curious to see how that will manifest itself, considering his previous style. Another example of a much different take for a director is illustrated here with a much more established NIFF director, Arnaud Desplechin, making his eighth appearance in the festival with his film Oh Mercy, also known in the original French as Roubaix une Lumière, Roubaix a Light. And it takes place in the town of Roubaix, where many of Desplechin's films have been set. And in contrast to his most recent films, which are like My Golden Days or Ismael's Ghost, which are very, very free, very almost wild evocations of a particular mindset, of a particular experience in the characters' lives, this one seems to be a much more sober affair, though, and a much less overtly exciting, but that can be very exciting in and of itself, of course. The film follows a middle-aged French Algerian detective investigating the fatal strangulation of a poor elderly woman in her apartment, and he suspects her next-door neighbors, two young women who may or may not be in a relationship. And it stars Rochedi Zem as the police captain, Duald, and the two suspects are played by Léa Seydoux and Sarah Forestier. So, and from what I've heard, it seems to be very committed to the police procedural format, and very much more concerned with the process than in overt revelation. So that could be a very exciting, and from what I've heard, also takes some cues from Hitchcock's The Wrong Man, which is, if true, a very exciting turn for De Plishan. The next film is by another very established NIF director, one of the most prolific NIF directors, Pedro Almodovar, with his 11th appearance, with one of his most, with perhaps his most personal film, Pain and Glory, starring Antonio Banderas as a almost too blatant stand-in for Almodovar, complete with a similar hairstyle, and he won the Best Actor for this at Cannes. De Plishan's film was also at Cannes, and Banderas' character is Salvador Malo, a director going through essentially a midlife crisis and with various ailings, addiction, and a creative block. And he seems, and it moves between the his childhood in the 60s, featuring Penelope Cruz as his mother, his years of triumph in the 80s, and his present existence in Madrid. I believe he is also going to attend a retrospective with an actor who had fallen out of favor with 20 years ago or so. And it is seems to be a very retrospective look at Almodovar's career, and a very personal one. And many, including myself, expected him to win the Palm because it's been, considering his long association with Cannes, and yet his so far he has not won the top prize, but it seems nevertheless to be a very, hopefully it will be a very moving and very introspective and emotional experience. Apologies if this has been too rambling or too unfocused so far. I'm not working with any notes, and as stated before, I'm the only one on this recording, so hopefully this will still be relatively engaging. The at this point, at the sort of center of the main slate, I'll discuss the centerpiece, which is Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, his sixth appearance in the festival, which included his debut Kicking and Screaming, and his first gala appearance as well. Also, Scorsese's first gala appearance as well. And this is, apologies for saying seems as well, because this is I haven't seen any of these films, of course. I know there are people who have been able to see some of these films before, but I have not present, so I'm just relying on my knowledge so far. So apologies if this seems a little bit waffling, but this Marriage Story will premiere at Venice, and it is a film about this long, tangled divorce between a experimental theater director, played by Adam Driver, and his principal actress and soon-to-be LA-based wife, Nicole, played by Scarlett Johansson, and it revolves around their quarrels, their court appearances. Scarlett Johansson's lawyer is played by Laura Dern, and Adam Driver's lawyers are Alan Alda and Ray Liotta as the essentially good cop, bad cop. And it also features Merritt Wever and Julie Haggerty. And it seems to be Baumbach's most ambitious, most sprawling film yet. His previous films had never crossed 2 hours, and this one is a hefty 136 minutes, 2 hours 15. And it, from what I've heard, shot 1.66 to 1 on 35, which is nice to hear from a director who's worked primarily in 16 and digital. And to see him reteaming with Adam Driver once more. And it seems to be very constructed around scenes, constructed around little interactions, and that for someone who greatly admires Baumbach, that's a very exciting thing to hear. And apparently Adam Driver even sings Stephen Sondheim at one point, so there's a lot to look forward to in that. The next film in the main slate is Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, Bong Joon-ho's third appearance in NIFF, and his and he won the Palme d'Or for this in kind of a surprise, simply because the Palme is, for once, the Palme went to the consensus favorite among the critics and the non-jury viewers. So it's almost strange to have a consensus Palme winner, but it's good to have it. And the film is basically another almost unclassifiable genre picture, simply because of the way in which Bong's films frequently shift tones and pitches and genres. But it follows a family of four who decides to hatch a scheme in order to live in this wealthy household of another family of four. The father of the poor family is played by Song Kang-ho, the regular Bong collaborator, and the wealthy father is played by Lee Sung-kyung, a regular in Hong's films, including Oki's movie, Nobody's Daughter, Hae-won, and Our Son-hee. And the film apparently goes into very strange directions. The description says it's one of the wildest, scariest, and most unexpectedly affecting years film movies in years, and is very deliberately about class, about the literal need apparently for upward mobility. And it sounds very exciting, it has already won many plaudits, so we'll see how that turns out. Basically, the next film is interestingly categorized as Film Comment Presents. For the past 5 or so years, Film Comment Presents has been a special event, and it's presented some films which probably would have been expected to be in the main slate, including Son of Saul, A Quiet Passion, and The Wild Pear Tree and Border. Those last two are from last year, but apparently it's now categorized as part of the main slate, which is a good thing, I think, especially for this film, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, directed by Celine Sciamma, best known for 2014's Girlhood. And it stars Adele Inel and Noemi Merlant. Merlant plays an artist who's in the 18th century, who travels to a island off the coast of Brittany and commissioned to create a portrait of a wealthy but free-spirited woman, Eloise, played by Inel, for whom a marriage is being arranged. And even though she has no interest in becoming married, and Marianne, the painter, is assigned to create a portrait so that the man who Eloise is being forced to marry will see it and then thus accept this arranged marriage. And from there, it blossoms into a love affair between the two women, and it won the best screenplay prize in the Queer Palm at Cannes. And it sounds, I haven't seen Sciamma's previous work, so I can't really comment, but it has won a great deal of acclaim already, so I'm very curious in seeing it. The next film is Saturday Fiction, a film by Liu Ye, making his first appearance in NIFF. Even though it's been quite a while since I've heard of a film of his garnering significant attention, this one will premiere at Venice in competition. And it stars Gong Li giving a mesmerizing techno-prisoner's performance in the film, a slow-burn spy thriller set in Japanese occupied Shanghai on the cusp of World War II. She plays an acclaimed actress, Jin Yu, who has returned to Shanghai from China after a long absence. Yu is in rehearsals for a play to be directed by a former lover played by Mark Chow, but she seems to have ulterior motives functioning as a double agent in gathering intelligence for the Allies, including the fateful realization of Japan's imminent attack on Pearl Harbor. Shooting in evocative black and white, director Liu Ye, who's also made such films as Suzhou Blues and Spring Fever, has created here a gripping thriller that builds to a nerve-wracking climax, and which never loses sight of the human beings caught up in the gears of history. So I haven't seen any of Liu's films, and I haven't heard a great deal about them, but that he's working with, that Golden Lee is coming back to a more art house direction certainly sounds very interesting. I am also curious because of the recent wave of Chinese films running afoul of the censors, including Zhang Yimou's 1 Second in Berlin and various The 800, which was set to open the Shanghai Film Festival, but was removed from circulation and removed from a theatrical release due to the current recurring thread is technical difficulties, but it seems to be a euphemism for censorship, and seems to be also related to films which run afoul of basically the Cultural Revolution. So we'll see how this turns out. It doesn't seem likely, especially because it's been marked for such high profile spots, but you never quite know. So this may or may not disappear from NIF if it actually runs afoul of the censors. The next film is by another first time director, Justine Triet, with her film Sybil, which played in competition at Cannes. And it follows the eponymous psychotherapist who decides to leave her practice to restart her writing career, only to find herself increasingly embroiled in the life of a desperate new patient, Margot, played by Adele Exarchopoulos, the star of Blue's The Warmest Color, a movie star dealing with the aftermath of a traumatic affair with her co-star Igor, played by Gaspar Ulliel, while trying to finish a film shoot under the watchful eye of a demanding director, played by Sandra Hulier, the lead actress in Tony Erdmann, who happens to be Igor's wife. Sybil, negotiating her own past demons, makes the fateful decision to use Margot's experiences as inspiration for her book, as boundaries of propriety fall one after another. And her previous film, In Bed with Victoria, is a favorite of previous Galison Witness guest Evan Morgan and Felipe Furtado, among others. And it sounds very promising and much more in a, if not sort of psychological thriller vein, which is exciting to see among the numerous other genre films or genre adjacent films in both the Cannes competition this year and as such NIF. The next film is Synonyms, directed by Nadav Lapid, his second appearance in the festival after his debut with Policemen. And it appears to be based on Lapid's life to a great deal. And it follows a former soldier, Yoav, played by Tom Mercier, who is an Israeli, but he's emigrated to Paris after his time in the military. And in an effort to further dissociate himself from his homeland, he forces himself to stop speaking Hebrew and becomes obsessed with learning the intricacies of the French language. And he falls into an emotional and intellectual triangle with a wealthy Bohemian couple, played by Louise Chevillot and Quentin Dolmer, who is the star of My Golden Days. And it follows his journey and his attempts to extricate himself from his Israeli origins to varying degrees of success. And it won the Golden Bear at Berlin, which was a nice surprise. And it garnered a great deal of acclaim there as well. And so it certainly sounds very promising. The next film is Kiyoshi Kurosawa's To the Ends of the Earth. And it's his sixth appearance in the festival, coincidentally besting Cure, his more well-known named countryman, Akira Kurosawa, and it seems to it though he's much more well-known for his thriller, the vein of his thrillers, this one seems to be closer to something like Tokyo Sonata or Journey to the Shore, and it follows a television host of a reality travel show who travels to Uzbekistan to film an episode. The host is Yoko, played by former J-pop idol Atsuko Maeda, and during the course of the trip, her chipper persona begins to dissolve, revealing the paranoia and dislocation beneath, and apparently it's filled with absurdly humorous set pieces and climaxing with a cathartic burst unprecedented in his oeuvre. And so it, as a very great fan of Kurosawa's work, I'm very excited and curious for to see this and to see exactly how it operates in the context of his films and just to see exactly how it unfolds. The next film is another returning director, albeit one who's been working for very many years, Marco Bellocchio, who made his first appearance in NIFF in the third edition, and this is his sixth appearance. His last one was with Vincere in 2009, and his film this time is The Traitor, which showed in Cannes. To the Ends of the Earth, the Kurosawa showed in, I believe it's opened in Japan, I'm not entirely certain, but it will be also showing in Locarno, the out of competition. So The Traitor is the longest film in this year's NIFF at 145 minutes. There are no films past 2.5 hours. And it is a very sweeping film, another mob drama over a period of years. And it stars Pier Francesco Favino as Tommaso Buscetta, a mafia boss turned informant who helped take down a large swath of organized crime leaders in Sicily in the 80s. And a lot of it appears to revolve around trials, around the ideas and codes of honor that so govern mobs and mob dramas. And it has the structure of a procedural but coasts on the waves of psychological portraiture. So as someone who's seen Fist in the Pocket for the podcast, but hasn't really seen any other Bellocchio's, including some of his more recent work like Blood of My Blood, I'm curious to see how this is received and how his style has shifted over his almost 60 years of working. He's 80 now, and that he's still making films at a fairly regular rate is fairly impressive. The next film is the final film by one of NIFF's regulars, Inez Varda, with her 10th film. The film is Varda by Agnes, which premiered in Berlin, I believe, before Varda's death earlier this year, and at the age of 90. And this is another documentary, a retrospective one in the vein of Beaches of Agnes and Faces Places, her two most recent films before this one. And apparently it incorporates a lot of use of onstage interviews and lectures and also clips and archival footage. And Varda guides us through her career, from her movies to her remarkable stills photography to the delightful and creative installation work. So it definitely seems to be very retrospective ones. I know that people have even compared it to a TED Talk in its sort of format, but that it has been selected was something that I was both somewhat expecting, especially due to the sentimental value, of course, of selecting the final film by one of the most iconic female directors, certainly. So it's not a total surprise, but it is nice to see anyways. The next film is by another somewhat perennial, Pedro Costa, with his third appearance in the festival with Vitalina Varela. which once again takes place in Fontenhaus and stars an actress or non-professional actress, the eponymous Vitalina Varela, who was also in Horse Money, his previous film. And she plays a Cape Verdean woman who has come to Fontenhaus, the location of many of Costa's previous films, including Horse Money and In Vonda's Room and Colossal Youth. Fontenhaus, for her husband's funeral, after being separated from him for decades due to economic circumstance, and despite her alienation, begins to establish a new life there. The grief of the present and the ghosts of the past commingle, and causes ravishing chiaroscuro compositions, a film of shadow and whisper that might be the director's most visually extraordinary work. And that last phrase is especially exciting because of the already impossibly beautiful and shadowy work of his previous digital films. So, and this one will be premiering in competition at Locarno, and it's already been picked up by the great people at Grasshopper Film. So I'm very, very excited for it. The next film is by another perennial, Oliver Asias, with his 10th appearance in the festival, and he even appeared last year with Nonfiction. And this takes an entirely different tact. His film Wasp Network, which will be premiering at Venice. And it follows in the vein of his long film Carlos, and it stars the star of Carlos, Edgar Ramirez, as Rene Gonzalez, and also stars Penelope Cruz, who's also in the Almodovar, as Olga, and the two are. And Rene Gonzalez is involved with a spy web of Cuban defectors in Miami who infiltrate anti-Castroist terrorist groups carrying out violent attacks on Cuban soil. And Olga is in the dark about Rene's double life in America. And it's inspired by Fernando Moraes' nonfiction, meticulously researched book, The Last Soldiers of the Cold War. And it seems very much in a thriller vein, and also stars Gael Garcia Bernal, Wagner Moura, Ana de Armas, and Leonardo Sparaglia. And as Asias has shown himself to be a very capable and very strong genre director, so I'm very excited to, especially since this one seems to have come together so quickly. I believe it's mostly in English, but I'm not 100% certain about that. The next film is another genre film, though a much more unexpected genre film, The Whistlers by Cornelio Pomboyu, in his fourth appearance. And his previous films in Romania have been much more in a dry comedic sense, very deadpan and politically minded one. This one seems to carry those as well, but in a neo-noir, very dedicated neo-noir fashion. And it stars perhaps the most prominent Romanian actor, including in Pomboyu's previous films, Vlad Ivanov, as a easily corruptible Bucharest police detective, Cristi, who arrives on the enshrouded Canary Island of La Gomera, where he learns a clandestine tribal language, which is made entirely out of whistling. And he becomes increasingly embroiled in a convoluted gangster scheme involving a stash of euros hidden in a mattress and a sultry femme fatale named, of course, Gilda. And it explores language and its genre conventions, and it's apparently his most playful and even exuberant film. And I know this is one of Dennis Lim's favorites out of Cannes, where it was in competition, and it certainly sounds very promising. Another film which was in competition and also follows a very genre-heavy framework is Diao Yinan's The Wild Goose Lake, and it's Diao's first appearance, and it's his in the festival and his follow-up to his breakthrough in 2014, Black Coal Thin Ice, which won the Golden Bear at Berlin. And it's set in the nooks and crannies of densely populated Wuhan, and follows the desperate attempts of small-time mob boss Zhou Zhenong, played by Huga, to stay alive after he mistakenly kills a cop and a dead or alive reward is put on his head. And it's very set-piece heavy, including a showstopper on a stolen bike. and it simultaneously devises a romance between Zhou and a mysterious young woman played by Gui Lunmei, who's out to either help or betray him. And DL definitely keeps multiple characters and chronology spinning, all the while creating an atmosphere thick with eroticism and danger. And it's good, as always, it's good to see genre films in it, and especially Chinese genre films in NIF. And it's also, I believe it has Liao Fan, who's also in Black Hole Thin Ice, and played the male lead in Ashes Pierce White. So I'm very curious to see how this is, especially considering how genre-heavy it appears to be in a festival already filled with genre. The next film is by another perennial, or two perennials, Jean-Pierre and Luc Dardenne, with their eighth appearance in the festival with Young Ahmed. And this is 8 out of 9 films, the only film thus far that has not appeared of theirs. Only feature is Lorna's Silence. And this one, I wasn't actually sure if it was going to appear or not, simply because it seems to be both controversial and was more tepidly received than other Dardenne films, even their previous one, The Unknown Girl, which was perhaps unfairly received at Cannes that year. And this time, somehow the Dardennes won the Best Director film, Best Director Award at Cannes. And this time it features them tackling the subject of homegrown terrorism, essentially, and it focuses on the eponymous Muslim teenager played by Idir Ben Adi in a small Belgian town who is being gradually radicalized into extremism despite the desperate protestations of his single mother, played by Claire Bodson, and he winds up hatching a murderous plot targeting his beloved teacher, played by Miriam Akadiu. And it seems, apparently, it also invokes the Dardenne's, if not total, like, it seems to be very much in their grounded, very realistic, and yet almost spiritual sort of style, or intimations of that, certainly. So it, perhaps even more because of its more polarized reception, it seems, as with all Dardennes, to be very promising. The last non-gala film is Bertrand Bonello's Zombie Child, which premiered in Cannes at Director's Fortnight, and it is his first film since Nocturama in 2016, which is still, I think, the most baffling non-selection for NIF in quite some time. And it was Dennis Lim's favorite film of the festival. And as the title might suggest, it features him taking on an even more genre approach, though focusing on zombies in the traditional Haitian conception rather than of the more film-influenced one of America. And in it, Bonello moves fluidly between 1962 Haiti, where a young man known as Clervius Narcisse, played by Mackenzie Bijou, made into a zombie by his resentful brother, ends up working as a slave in the sugarcane fields at a contemporary Paris girls' boarding school, where a white teenage girl, Louise Labeck, befriends Clervius's direct descendant, played by Wislanda Louis-May, who's orphaned in the 2010 Haiti earthquake. These two disparate strands ultimately come together in a film that evokes, that very deliberately evokes, apparently, I Walked with a Zombie by Turner, and feverishly dissolves boundaries of time and space as it questions colonialist myth-making. And it seems to be very heavy on cross-cutting between these two timelines, and I'm very, very, very excited to see how that turns out. The closing night film is the second film by Edward Norton, the actor, and after he directed a film early in the 21st century that I have heard very little about and which seems to be very pleasant, but if not extremely, if not all that interesting. But this is a adaptation of Jonathan Lethem's Motherless Brooklyn, which transports that film's a neo-noir contemporary setting to the 1950s New York, and it follows a lonely private detective with Tourette syndrome, Lionel Esrog, played by Norton, who finds himself drawn into a multi-layered conspiracy that expands to encompass the city's ever-growing racial divide and the devious personal and political machinations of Robert Moses, like Master Builder, played by Alec Baldwin, and also features performances by Bruce Willis, Willem Dafoe, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Bobby Cannavale, Leslie Mann, and Cherry Jones, and it's also runs almost 2.5 hours, 144 minutes, and it seems to be, I haven't really heard anything about it. It could be good. It premieres also at Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, and it seems to be very much a New York film through and through, and I can only presume that's one of the main emphases behind its selection as a closing night film. So that's the 29 films of the main slate at present. All the films I deemed virtual locks did end up making it in, though because of how strange this year was, many of the strong chances and the moderate possibilities did not. Little Women by Greta Gerwig has not appeared at any festivals thus far. It might premiere at Telluride, but I'm not entirely certain about that. It might not premiere until the end of the year when its release happens. Little Joe by Jessica Hausner, which is at Cannes in competition and won the Best Actress Prize, I believe, did not, which I was really surprised did not actually happen, especially considering a general enthusiasm for it. The Salt of Tears by Philippe Gorel, what I thought had been completed, but it did not show up at either Venice or Locarno, so it might end up heading for Berlin or Cannes sometime next year. And Uncut Gems by the Safdies, which is premiering at Toronto. I was very, very surprised, perhaps the biggest surprise of the films that were not ultimately selected, but there may have been, Toronto might have kept it or held onto the film, so no way to know for certain. For the moderate possibilities, Divine by Love by Gabriel Mascaro didn't end up showing up. Emma by Pablo Larraín, which is premiering at Venice, did not show up, which I wasn't totally surprised by because of Larraín's sort of sporadic presence at NIFF in recent years. 14 by Dan Sleet, A Hidden Life by Malick, which is also not a total surprise because of Malick's also very limited appearance in NIFF. Only his debut, Badlands, showed up, and that was as a world premiere closing night. It Must Be Heaven by Ilya Suleiman, his first film in a while, which was at Cannes, which also won a special prize, but didn't end up showing up. The Laundromat by Steven Soderbergh, which is at Venice. The Lighthouse by David Eggers. Sorry We Missed You by Ken Loach. Tomas by Abel Ferrara. And The Truth by Hirokazu Koreeda, which is opening and will be in competition at Venice. So those are some interesting and a little bit surprising non-appearances, but considering how large this slate is at 29 films and how uniformly strong it seems, notably there's only 4 films that are American in the slate, which is, by my standards, generally a good thing, and that there are a couple surprises, but also many welcome surprises and just films that were totally expected but which showed up nevertheless. It's always good to have those, like Parasite or Synonyms. So in conclusion, this has hopefully been a not too monotonous an experience for the viewer, and hopefully the main run of the show will be able to resume shortly. And this is a good time to mention that I am looking for guests who are interested in appearing on further festival dispatches for this year, guests who are attending the NIFF, this year's NIFF, and are seeing at least a few films, though you don't have to see a lot of films, just a few films. So if you're listening and you're interested, please DM me. And thank you to listener, as always, for bearing with me. This is definitely a shorter episode than usual, but hopefully it hasn't been totally unenlightening one. So thank you for listening, and I don't know if there will be two more Festival Dispatches like last year, or if there will be only one. We'll see about that, but hopefully you'll keep listening, and please check back sometime in September, probably towards the end of September, for the return from the hiatus of the mainline of episodes. So thank you for listening again.